Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. And today I'm joined once again by the younger, more graceful, more handsome Super Trooper. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back again.
And as you fine clappers know, Super Trooper's in charge of our bonus episode development and structure and writing and whatnot. So why don't you talk us through what we're doing today?
Today we're doing a bit of a 2024 wrap-up, but unlike a lot of other content creators, because that's what we are.
We create content.
I know I don't play enough 2024 games, for example, to do a top 10 favorite games from 2024. I tend to be a year or two behind in the game release cycle.
So, or 15 years.
Or 15 years, yeah. Although some of these 15-year-old games are getting reprints.
Uh-huh.
So yep. I'm catching up on games from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So what I thought we would do instead was talk about our top 10 most played games in 2024. And I think this would be interesting because it gives us a chance to talk about games that might not necessarily be our favourites, but they're definitely probably on the lighter end of the scale for the most part, and get played a fair bit in our gaming groups.
Yeah, when I ran the list, it was interesting. I think what you'll see is that Unpix is there's two kind of disparate groups of games in here, not to bury the lead, but we've got the games, like you've mentioned, that get played a lot, and then there's the games that I play a lot, which are solo games that I actually crank to the table quite a bit by myself, I'm playing with myself. So I guess first question, I know we both track games and you track games a lot more diligently and precisely than I actually had to be really careful. I'm looking through and some of these things and looking at plays and play counts, and I'm quite sure that for some of the games in my list, my play counts are incorrect because I've either missed recording something or whatever the case is. But I know there's no surprises when you track games in something like BG Stats, which we both do. But were there any on your list, without giving them away just yet, were there any in your list you went, oh, I didn't think that would be top 10?
I had one game in particular that was a very late charge onto the list.
Uh-huh.
Very, very late.
Yeah, see, I similarly, a lot of what's on my list, I didn't acquire until October. Some of the games, spoiler, that I picked up at PAX, for example, that got a lot of play in a very short period of time and really raced to the top. So, interesting.
I'll tell you a little spoiler about one that didn't make the list, but was very, very close, was Voidfall.
Yeah, see, Voidfall didn't make my most played list either. And I think that's probably because when you play Voidfall, it's 45 minutes to set it up, it's 4.5 hours to play, and it's another 15 minutes to put away. It wasn't in my top played by play counts, not by a long shot, but it's still Voidfall.
It was definitely the heaviest game I played the most this year.
Interesting. Probably. Yeah, I think I clocked 9 plays of Voidfall this year.
I had 8, so you must have done a solo
play. I must have done a solo play. Yeah, so I clocked 9 plays of Voidfall. All right. And with that prelude, it's on with the show and the cicadas.
Okay, so my number 10 most played game this year was Marvel Champions.
Marvel Champions, do you know how many plays you had for Marvel Champions?
I think it was only 10 this year.
Yeah?
Yeah, only 10. Those 10 plays were pretty early in the year, and then it got supplanted by another Marvel game.
Yep.
Which, spoils, will be much higher on the list.
Right.
But over the Boxing Day sales, I managed to round out the collection, and I'm in the middle of building a few decks, and I'm looking forward to getting a lot more plays of it in January, catching up on the content.
Nice. And you play that mostly solo, don't you?
Mostly solo, and I've just started playing it solo two-handed, which I think makes it a lot more fun.
And Marvel Champions, Beelzebub plays Marvel United.
She does.
Okay, right. United, okay, yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, my number 10 is a heavy one. This is my number 10 most played game of the year. And I only have play counts for, I think, my number 1 or 2 on here. So forgive me, I don't know the play counts. But my number 10 is Scholars of the South Tigris.
Yes,
my number 10 most played game. It was definitely in double digits. I know, I think we played 8 games, possibly.
Yeah, close to.
And I think I played 2 more solo on that. So, Scholars of the South Tigris, one of my favorite games from Phillips and McDonald, or McDonald Hill. I can't remember the name of the law firm that releases those. But one of my favorites. Love it every time I play it. I have Inventors of the South Tigris sitting on the shelf for first, waiting for us to play, because that fulfilled this year. But Scholars of the South Tigris was my number 10 most played. Very happy to see it there.
Number 9 for me, you were joking about older games, was probably one of the oldest games on my list, but it was a relatively new reproduction of it, and that is High Society
by
Rainer Knizia.
Yes. Now, High Society, remind me, because High Society...
it's the auction game.
Is that the auction game?
Where you're bidding on the fancy things, which are numbers 1 through 10.
But it's really quick. That's the one we played with Tappy, and he said you win with 8 or 9 or whatever, 9 points, exactly, and then he won with the exact... Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I've only played that the once at PlayCon. I think I've played that... Or maybe played it twice.
I've played it a couple of times.
Yeah.
But the hook on it being, it's an auction game, you know, you're auctioning and whoever has the most points wins, but if you spent the most money during the game, you get kicked out.
That's right.
So it becomes a little bit of a blocking
That's
game.
Right. My first game, I think I had $1 left at the end of the game or whatever, 1,000. I had the one left.
And it comes down to someone's holding one card in their hand at the end, like, what is it? Is it the $25,000 card or is it the $1,000 card?
Yeah.
Comes a little bit of a bluffing game, and if you haven't been counting cards, which I never do.
No, I'm not smart enough to count cards.
Me too. It becomes a little bit of a gamble.
Nice. Great game. Now, my number 9 is a house favorite. It's a game that always ends up with... It's a very raucous game. There's pounding on the table. There's shouting and chanting. It's not raw. There's chanting and raw. It's a dexterity game, and it's one of the Peanuts' favorite. And we can't play it between dinner and bedtime because her blood pressure ends up at like 190 over 95, and we can't get her to sleep after. But that's Paku Paku.
Yes.
Now, Paku Paku is a house favorite. We don't play a ton of dexterity games, but Paku Paku is one which, you know, you're rolling the dice and you're shoving those dice around as fast as you can, and you're trying to stack those little tiny plates up as fast as you can. And, you know, you shout, if the plates fall, you shout, Paku, stop. And it's a blast. We love Paku Paku. That's my number 9 most played. And that's what I liked about this list suggestion, is it would never make a top 10 list for me anywhere else. I love Paku Paku, but it would never make a top 10 list. So Paku Paku, my number 9 most played. Highly recommend it. Hard to find. I think I had to get mine on Amazon International, because I think it's pretty hard to find here in Australia. If you're in the States, you could probably get it for 90 cents at every store or something. It's pretty easy. But Paku Paku.
The Bubble talks about it all the time.
Yeah.
Her and the Peanut are here today, so I'm assuming Paku Paku might be demanded.
Paku Paku, there's a few. There's a few they like, and I won't mention them in case they're on your list later on. So back to you for number 8.
Number 8 is once again another Rainer Knizia game.
Funny that. Yeah.
And it is...
Can I guess? Rainer Knizia,
I think it might even be a 2024 release.
That you played a lot of. Rainer Knizia 2024...
Here.
Your first play was here with me.
It was not in the bunker, though. It was upstairs.
Rainer Knizia. Yeah. No, can't do it.
One of the Bubbles' favourite games. We played it at PlayCon.
One of the Bubbles' favourite games. Yeah. No, I can't do it.
Mlem.
Oh, see, Mlem. I keep forgetting Mlem. And when I was going back and looking at my list of all the games I played that were 2024 releases, and Mlem came up, and I'm like, oh, is that really this year? Because it feels like it should have been around a lot longer. It's one of those games when you play, it feels like, oh, this is a great game. Must have been around for ages. So Mlem, for those that haven't played Mlem, talk them through Mlem.
So Mlem, it's a push-your-luck dice game where you load up a rocket ship full of astronauts, which are cats.
Which are cats.
And each little astronaut has a different little power, and then you roll the dice and you start going up this track. And if you don't roll the correct numbers, the ship crashes.
Yeah.
It's okay. Cats always land on their feet.
Correct.
Even if it's from orbit.
That's right.
They still land on their feet. They're okay.
And from memory, Mlem is the name for the cats with the tongue half out of their mouth, the face.
With their tongue out.
Yeah, yeah. Great game.
It's been a great push-your-luck game. You see someone like Coop or even Dusty they'll just keep putting the cap on that gives extra points for getting to outer space.
Yep.
And they'll just stay on that rocket.
Yep.
Every time.
Yep.
Until they get to outer space.
Yeah.
And they'll either win the game.
But that was Beelzebubble's tactic for the first 10 games, wasn't it? I'm going for the comet. I'm going for Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
It is a great game. My number 8 is also involving cats. And it's one that I picked up late in the year. And it's another dexterity game, which again is very fast become a house favorite because you throw it on the table, you play it in 10 minutes. It's always hilarious. There's a lot of sort of... It's not so much take that, but it's kind of, there's a little bit of screw you in there, and that's Nekojima.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, now Nekojima, I know we've talked about that on the pod before, but Nekojima, you're basically building power lines on this tiny little island, and then you're hanging suicidal cats on the lines, and you're handing cats to people around the table. They've got to hang on the lines, and these towers get taller and taller and taller. It's like Jenga, but it's fun. Basically.
Yes.
You know, and I know that I think in your house you're fans of Nekojima as well.
Well, yes, your copy spent a few weeks at Super Trooper HQ.
Yeah, it goes back and forth a bit.
Played a fair bit.
Yeah, so we love Nekojima. The Peanut loves Nekojima. I love Nekojima. Again, it's one you can throw on the table and you can teach it on the fly. You go, here you go, roll these dice, put these out, good luck. And it's great fun. I think Nekojima, as far as dexterity games go, is excellent.
Number 7 for me, I think I lied earlier when I said Voidfall was the heaviest game.
Ooh.
Number 7 is definitely physically heavier.
Okay.
And that is Frosthaven.
Ah, okay.
You didn't get as many plays in I didn't
because you and Coop get together semi-regularly and my schedule wasn't allowing for attendance on a lot of those days. But yes. All right, so without bogging down the entire podcast episode, for those that don't know what Frosthaven is, give us the broad brush. Because we can talk about Frosthaven for an hour and a half.
It's a dungeon crawler, but really it's driven by a hand card management system.
Yeah.
So it feels like a Euro crossed with a dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal.
It is. It's really excellent. It's not for the faint of heart, because taking on Frosthaven is... I don't reckon it's a much smaller commitment than Aeon Trespass in the end, to be honest.
It's got, I think it's...
It's 120 scenarios?
Something. You don't play all of them. No. Some of them get locked out.
Yeah.
I think we're about 50-odd scenarios through. I'm on to my...
You're on to your third or fourth character, aren't you?
I just started my fourth character.
I'm still on my first character. It's a good thing I really like it, because I'm still on my first character. I reckon I'm going to finish Frosthaven with that single character.
Well, I reckon the next time we play, you might get through.
You can't find those bloody lurkers for me.
Oh, we've just unlocked a few more missions. Yeah, all lurker-related.
So. And how far through do you think you guys are? At a guess.
We've done about 50 missions. I said the game comes with 120 or something, but maybe, say, 20 of them get locked out.
Yeah.
So if we play every scenario, we still have 50 to go.
Yeah, maybe just halfway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my number 7 is a much lighter game, but I do know that it's also a favorite in both houses. And it's also a game. It's a 2024 game, I think. Didn't actually look up the... It's one we love, and to the point where it's kind of elbowing out another game that we've loved for years, and that's Harmonies.
Yes.
My number 7 most played is Harmonies for the year. And I don't know how many plays we've had of that, but the Fox loves Harmonies. You love Harmonies. Buttercup loves Harmonies. And Harmonies, I know, is another one that goes back and forth. I think Harmonies spent 3 months at your place at one point.
Well, it did, because my number 6 most played game is Harmonies. And again, I don't own Harmonies. I almost got it at the Boxing Day sales.
Yeah.
It came down to $50 or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, look at that. And then I went out on Christmas Day and got a $50 Bezos voucher. And I went back and it had gone.
Yeah,
it was back up to full price.
I almost called you when I was at PAX last year because it was on sale. I think it was $48 was the lowest I saw it at PAX. I thought, oh. But then you and I try so hard not to double up on games because it's right there. You can take it whenever you want it. But it is nice to have it on tap. It's nice to have, for games like that, to have them on tap. You know when you want to play them. So Harmonies, it's Cascadia-esque. You know, you're building out your habitats. It's very pretty. It's 3D because you're stacking towers up. I think it's easier to parse than Cascadia because of that third dimension of stacking those chips up. I'm still not sure whether we talk back and forth, but I know you love Harmonies more than Cascadia. I don't know. Cascadia is still... It's one of those.
The gap's widening every time I play both of them.
Is that right?
Yeah, for Harmonies.
All right, so we've...
I think, and like I've this year introduced the bubble to both Cascadia and Harmonies, and they're both, as you said, staple favourites of Buttercup. But I think Harmonies is giving the nudge. As you can see, spoilers, Cascadia is not on this list.
Yeah, okay. It's not on my list either. I don't know how... I think I only played maybe three games of Cascadia this year. So we've skipped through your number six pretty quick.
Number six as well.
So we're back to my number six. And my number six is, I think you and Dusty and I have been... I won't use the term limping through this game, but we've been... It's almost like core bashing this game some days, trying to get through it. Probably 2 years we've been playing it. And I love it. I love it. And when we get at the table, we play it 6-7 times in rapid succession, and that is the Quest for Planet Nine. That's what it is.
No one knows that N-bit, just call it the crew.
It's the crew. It's the crew. It's the crew space, not the crew water.
Yes.
And I think we're probably only just halfway through that.
I don't think we're even that. We could be like, what is that, 50?
I think it's 50 scenarios. Like
23, 24.
There you go. So we're on 23 or 24. And we've been bashing at that for a couple of years.
Oh, Dusty arrives later today.
Yeah. Well, you'd say, did you bring it today?
I brought it.
Ah, because you took it home the other day. And so look, the crew, it's great. It's trick-taking. It's limited communication. There's a lot of, you know, fist on the table at the end when you're trying desperately to get your message across to your colleagues and you can't because you've put your little token down on something and it's been misread. It's a blast. The crew's great. I'm looking forward to playing it every time. It's heaps of fun. And that was my number six most played in 2024.
Number five, back to me, is another Reiner Knizia game.
Okay.
But it's my last one on the list. Let me just confirm that. Yes, it's my last
one. It's your last one on the list, and you've played it more than Mlem. Ha! Can I guess?
You may.
It has to be Ra.
Incorrect.
Oh, really?
It's My City.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Yes, so fair we enough. Started this earlier in the year, and we took us about 6 months. We'd only played maybe the first chapter, so we only played like three games last year, because we got it at the end of 2023.
Yeah.
But we barely powered through the campaign.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was myself, Buttercup, and the Bubble, and she absolutely loved it.
Well, spoiler alert, My City's my number four. It's my number four most played, so we'll skip number four to me when we get to it. But, the Fox and I played My City. We finished the last game, and she went, "That was really great. Is that it?" I went, "Yeah, unfortunately, that." I said, "Well, there's another game we could play by flipping it over, but that's it for sort of the story unfolding." So I did buy her My Island for Christmas.
There you go, yep.
And she was very happy to see that when she unwrapped that at Christmas morning. And, to see the Fox squeal with a board game is a big deal because the Fox is not a board game girl necessarily. And so she's very excited to try My Island, and we're looking forward to playing that together.
Does she play board games?
Does she play board games?
Yes or no question.
Yes.
But she's a board gamer.
I guess. I mean, sometimes it's under protest. Actually, it's less and less under protest. I don't know whether this affair on the side is taking new heights, because the other day she said, "Oh, can we play a board game?" I went, "Shit, yes, we can. Let's get to the table." So, yeah, more and more. So
We haven't tried the ongoing version of My City, but I do mean you've given me your old copy. So yeah. I'm going to another legacy campaign and then set up the ongoing version as well.
You can probably kitbash two boxes, one that's got the ongoing that we can pass back and forth and try, and one that we can pass on to somebody else or somebody can play it again. So that was your number five?
That was my number five.
All right, so my number five is a game that you and I have played a lot. I know it's one of your favorite games, and I would say it's easily one of my favorite games to play, with you. I'd love to try it solo. I know you've played it solo, and that's Arkham Horror.
Yes.
So Arkham Horror is my number five most played. I think we played two full campaigns this year. I think we did. I think we played two full... We played one earlier, maybe, that we were finishing at your place.
I was going to say, you're technically incorrect. Because we failed on the second last mission of one of the campaigns and got locked out of the last scenario.
Yeah, we still played.
We
didn't
play the full campaign.
Oh, okay. All right. We've played two different boxes then, shall we say.
Correct.
Yeah. And it was fantastic. Arkham Horror, I love... I think it's. I don't think it's a game I'm yet very good at, despite you sending me training videos. Not so much training videos, but, "Oh, you should watch this. This tells you how to play this character better." And I go, "Yeah, okay, I'll watch it." And I do. And I feel like I'm better than I was with the first campaign we played with Zoe, the chef, who still loves Zoe. Zoe's still my favorite character ever. But loved it. We played, I don't know how many, but Arkham Horror is my number five. Loved it. We played a campaign here in the bunker Thursday nights. I think it was September, October-ish. We played through that. Loved it. And Arkham Horror, my number five.
I'll talk about it a little bit more in a few minutes.
I thought you might. So you're number four.
Number four is a game we both own. One of the few we've doubled up on.
Okay.
And I would argue it's the Bubbles' number one game. It is her most requested. So every Tuesday, after when I get her from after school care,
I've got a guess on this
we
one.
We play a game.
Yep.
And 1 week it's my choice.
Yep.
1 week it's her choice.
Yeah.
And her choice, usually without fail, is spots.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it involve Dalmatians?
It does.
Yep.
Well, and other dogs.
And other dogs. And, oh, yes. And a cow. And a cow. That's right.
Yes, but spots. Another, like Mlem, a push your luck
yep.
dice game.
Yeah.
And
it's fantastic. Spots is fantastic.
It has given me one of my favorite gaming moments.
I know the one you're going to talk about.
It was over at my place.
Yeah.
I was in the kitchen cooking
yep.
or cleaning or doing something. And you're, I don't know if you're playing, but you're leading it.
Yeah, and I think I was like game mastering because yeah, people were learning it.
Like Battleships was there.
Yeah.
His wife was there.
Yeah.
It was the first time she'd come down. And the amount of raucous laughter.
It was wild.
Coming from there was just awesome.
Because everyone was trying so to push good. Their luck and then, you know,
failing
miserably. And then that's where, you know, the famous boon came out because, you know, yeah, it was a great game that. And I remember that specific game. It was awesome. And it was loud. And I remember pissing myself laughing at the table. And you were pissing yourself laughing in the kitchen. I think you had a tea towel in your hand. And we were both just dying with laughter. And it was a blast. And Spots is a blast. The Peanut also loves Spots. The Fox loves Spots. Yeah, it's a great game.
Good. I think the reason it's ahead of Mlem is
yeah.
because it's just so easy to set up.
It is.
It's a small box game. Mlem's a fairly big box.
Yeah.
Whereas Spots, deal out some dog cards.
Yeah.
A big pile of dice, pile of bones.
Yeah.
Away you go.
You're ready to play in 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we'll skip. That was your number four?
That was my number four.
Well, we'll skip my number four because we all know now it's My City. We didn't talk about My City at all. We just, about the gameplay.
No, we're just talking about our experience.
So about our experience. With it. So My City, My City's a, it's a flip and lay. You're flipping a deck of cards and you're, it's a polyomino. You're building a little city on your tableau. And it's a legacy game. It's a legacy game. It changes. There's eight chapters with three games in each.
Yeah.
So you finish the whole thing, it's 24 games. And it's a fail forward, so you don't have to replay anything. And every three games, new rules come out, new tiles come out, new stickers come out. I won't spoil anything for any of you that haven't played My City. My City is a blast. And again, it's very easy. The nights we were playing My City, you'd open the box, we'd be set up in a minute and a half because you basically tip your tiles out and you shuffle the cards and you read the rules for the new the new envelope.
Put a few stickers down
and we would play a chapter in a night and chapters three games. And a game could be as quick as sort of 12 minutes.
Yeah.
10, 12 minutes. So in a half hour, we could play a whole chapter, maybe a little bit longer as you're trying to grok the new rule set. But My City is great. So that was my number four. And so just like that, we're already into top three.
So top three is, for me,
yep.
Arkham Horror.
Yeah, okay.
And I think my love of it has risen more this year.
Yeah.
And I think part of it, games like this and Marvel Champions as well, where I played Magic when it was first released in the 90s at high school, and I never really got into it. But these games, I kind of give that itch in the deck creation side of things. And I look at it and I go, okay, well, I'm going to play the Soldier, Mark Harrigan the Soldier for Arkham Horror. He's got the highest combat strength in the game, so I'm just going to give him a shotgun and go around and just blow monsters apart. You know, simple. And any card that gives you fists or gives you damage, just take it.
Yeah.
All right. Then I found this YouTube channel called Playing Board Games.
Yep.
Who are a fellow Canadian, like yourself.
Yes.
Hermes.
These are the Arkham Horror videos that you sent me, and they deep dive everything.
Correct. And he releases a video a day, and it's probably about 75% Arkham Horror content. And he's got things like Spirit Island and a few other games in there. And you watch these videos, and they'll talk about, they'll go, okay, here's Mark Harrigan, the soldier. And they'll do a little video on him. And they come up with these weird combos of cards that you haven't even thought of, because you don't, for me, I wasn't deck creating in that way.
Yeah.
But you watch these videos and you're like, huh.
Because I must admit, we sit down, we create a character and I go, that's a cool card. I'll have that. Oh, that's a cool. So I end up with a deck full of cool cards that fucking hate each other.
Yes.
Right.
But you watch some of the synergies that obviously people a lot smarter than us come up with. And then I carried over some of that into our last campaign, where I took Trish, she's a spy, whatever, and she was a green, a rogue character, but she could just grab clues all over the map.
Yeah,
just saved us in
Yeah.
In our Path to Carcosa.
I blasted through two characters because I had permadeath in about scenario six. I got stuck in the asylum. Yeah.
But yeah, so I played a campaign solo two-handed. I played, and then he had one and a bit campaigns.
Yeah.
With you, and I'm looking forward to.
How to play solo two-handed? I know we've talked about it, but just for OMC crew.
It's definitely harder than playing it solo or playing even two-player but one-handed. But the more I've played it now, it's becoming second nature.
Yeah, nice.
So that was number three.
Well, my number three, I've got to actually cluster a group of games. It's not a cheat. It's definitely not a cheat, but it's a group of games, and that's because you only play them once. And I've blasted through a lot of this year with the Peanut because they're her favorite, and that's the Exit games.
Yes.
So my number three most played is the Exit series. The Peanut absolutely freaking loves an Exit game. We'll throw them down on the table, and we'll do them, after dinner on a Saturday night. They say if you can do it in 2 hours, you're doing well. I don't think we ever hit the two-hour mark because she is just so sharp. And granted, we're not playing the level 5 stuff. Because the level 5 stuff, I think maybe next year. We play up to level... they're rated out of 5. We've played up to the level 3 stuff. I think I've still got a few on the shelf. And I think they're all level 3 or lower. So we blast through those. And it's one night. It's one shot done. But then, of course, we do the Exit calendar every year. That's 24 sessions. We love them. We love the Exit games. It's interesting, when I ran the stats for my year on BG Stats, and it said, here's your most played board game designers. It was Reiner Knizia, and then there was the husband and wife team. I'm like, who the hell are they? And I'm like, I can't remember your names. I'm sorry, guys. You're amazing. But they're the two that create the Exit series. And I looked at them like, oh, of course.
And Rajas.
They did. They do Rajas, yeah. Yeah, they've actually got quite a pedigree, which I would never have picked, because the Exit series is so specific and whatnot. So
Marcus and Inca Brandt?
Yes, that's it. Well done. Well done. I named them in, I think, last episode. But the Exit games, we love them. My number three most played in the year.
Number two is the Marvel game that you mentioned earlier.
And what was that again? What is that called?
Marvel United.
Oh, Marvel United, of course.
So I've had most of season 1 and 2 of this for quite a while, and I've been playing it 2-player, 3-player with the Bubble and Buttercup. But just before PlayCon, like I'd say 3 or 4 days before PlayCon this year, season 3 arrived. Mm-hmm. Giant box,
yeah.
Which stacked was as tall as, or if not taller than, the Bubble.
Yes, I remember the photo.
So I had a little quick unpacking with that, and then we went down to PlayCon. And
198 minis later.
Yep. Then came back, and I started playing it solo, three-handed.
Yep.
And I am loving it.
Yeah.
Each season, the mechanics, the core mechanics are still the same.
Yeah.
You choose between 2 to 4 heroes. Each hero has 12 cards, which are a combination of various symbols. You choose a villain, you choose 6 locations, and you go.
Yep.
And the plug-and-play nature of it is just phenomenal. You can either try and beat thematics. You go, I'm going to go against the Green Goblin, and I'm going to take 3 Spider-Man type characters.
Yeah.
And do it. Or you can do that, and you can say, hey, let's have the Green Goblin fight Wolverine, Deadpool, and Mr. Fantastic. You can just throw anyone in. And next year, there's DC United coming, so you can play...
And you can slam them together, can't you? You're going to Batman versus Wolverine, basically.
Yes, something like that. It's just phenomenal. And because it is such an easy game to play, I've been playing it three-handed solo, and it's quite easy to set up three decks, across the board, and then just go. And
nice.
The content is so, so good.
Yeah. I think I've only played that a couple of times. I don't think I played it this year with you. We played it a couple of times last year. It's very enjoyable. I think I prefer Marvel Champions. I just think the decision space is a little bit...
Oh, there's definitely more game in Marvel Champions.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to show you some of the new content for Marvel United.
Beelzebub plays United?
She does, yeah.
Nice. And she, who's her favorite character?
Any female character.
Yeah, all right. Girl power.
Take a girl power. So she'll say, who's a girl I can play? Oh, here's Squirrel Girl, or here's Black Cat, or here's She-Hulk, or something like that, and she just loves it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, my number two, and we're going into two games that are very similar from my top two, but my number two is a campaign game. And I thought about pulling them out of the counts because I didn't think it was maybe fair, but my number one and number two, the play counts are so high We're in like mid-20s, late-20s, so high that I thought it's not fair to pull them up because they are my most played. So my number two is ISS Vanguard, most played game.
Which means I know what your number one is.
Yeah. You will know, and listeners of the pod will probably be able to guess what my number one is. My number two is ISS Vanguard. As a campaign, it's fantastic. I played it. Some scenarios I played four-handed. It was just a little bit too meaty to play four-handed. My sweet spot was three-handed. But the nice thing with ISS Vanguard is you can drop characters in and out. And you're not even dropping characters in. You're dropping character classes in and out. So you're going into a scenario. You go, well, I want to take security. I want to take an engineer. And I want to take a recon specialist. And you can drop them in. And then you slot in the bodies that go in. And it's the bodies that upgrade level 1, 2, and 3. And if they die, they go to the Wall of Memoriam, and hopefully you've got someone else trained in your roster that can fill them. And it hurts if you lose a level 3 character and you've got to put a level 1 in your engineer. Oh, it hurts. But thematically, it makes sense. You know, your experienced engineer's cacked it. He's had an alien just disembowel him. I've got to get the dude in the red shirt come down and take his place. And the way they manage that's so clever, in that the more powerful your character is, the more dice in number they can take into combat, or they can take into a scenario. And so your level 1s can take 7 dice, but your level 3s can take 12 dice in with them. And it's really excellent because the dice are consumed, and that's your exhaustion level through the scenarios. ISS Vanguard is fantastic. It's a great game. I actually think, you know, while it would be good to play with someone else, I think it's really a solo game. I think it's like, you know, a lot of these campaign games, I don't think it has enough. Like Frosthaven, for example, where you need 3 or 4 people at the table, because the overhead of running Frosthaven is also huge. You know,
also the way those characters interact.
But also as you're going into a scenario, it's you've got, in something like a Frosthaven, you've got that angst of, well, I've got 20 cards to choose from. I can only bring 12. And you really have to think about what you're doing. And to do that for 2 or 3 or 4 characters is one of the reasons I didn't play Gloomhaven solo. I started playing it solo and I couldn't. It was just too much to unpick going into a scenario. Whereas ISS Vanguard, it's like, well, I've got a level 3, I'm taking these 12 dice, I've got this is the armory, this is the equipment I'm going to pick, you can be set up. And yeah, it's probably a half hour planning to go into a scenario, but then the play of the scenario was a dream. It was like 100 hours of ISS Vanguard, and it went on the table, and I think I played ISS Vanguard starting to finish in about 5 weeks. So my number 2, ISS Vanguard.
My number 1 only became my number 1 within the last week. It rocketed up from probably like number 10.
Wow.
All the way to number 1.
In the last week. Now, you were away for a week.
I was.
So what did you take away with you for the week? Let me think. You were away with family.
You've mentioned it on your list. You've mentioned that I've returned it today. I brought it back.
Ah, okay. All right, fire away. It's the crew. Your number 1 most played. Okay.
So last week, I went up to beautiful Crescent Head, staying with my brother Moose and his partner Potato. And so Moose and Potato... So Potato is a very, very competitive person.
Right.
So I said to her, she likes trick-taking, so yep. We've played Cat in the Box. I've taken that up.
Yes, another great game.
Yeah, I've introduced them to things like Arboretum.
Yep.
Ra. A few things like that. And Moose is a little bit less of a gamer than Potato and the rest of us.
Yeah.
And he comes sometimes like, you know, what's going on when we explain the rules, and, you know, has a blank look on his face. But then, so I brought the crew. I said, look, it's a cooperative game. And Potato said, why are we playing a cooperative game? Get this trash out of my hands.
Sure, yeah.
And I said, but yeah, it's cooperative, but it's trick-taking, which you like. I said, but what we can do is we can compare how many times it took us to do a scenario versus the other groups that I'm playing with. She said, I'm in.
We set a pretty low bar for that, unfortunately. Yeah.
So let's get going with the crew.
Yeah.
So we started playing the crew, and there was a bit of silence around the table, as there kind of has to be. There's no communication rules.
Yeah.
But then they're like, let's do another scenario.
Yeah.
And let's do another scenario. Let's do this another scenario. So playing it.
So you finished all 50 while you were away?
No. We got through about, I think, 10 scenarios. Or maybe we completed 9 and we didn't finish 10 before we had to.
That's a good effort
to pack it in. We were playing 4 players: myself, Buttercup, Moose, and Potato. And it got to some scenarios, and Moose would be like, "I don't see how we can win this." Or Potato would say, "I don't know how we can win this." And I'll be like, "Well, look, since I'm the experienced trick taker in this group,
sure.
For once, usually it's I'm usually the inexperienced one. I'll be like, just
let it go, let it ride, let it ride, because we've been at that table, yeah. Like this is impossible, and then we've pulled it out.
And then a few scenarios in, I can see the strategies coming. Yeah. Burn one suit, so you know, because you've got to be able to win a trick with a one or something. So we've got to, someone can say, oh, I've got this one, so let's try and burn everything,
yeah,
our colors to win, things like that. And yeah, we had a great time. So
nice
being our week away, I took, you know, two bags of games. And as I was leaving potatoes, like, just bring the crew next time.
Nice,
don't need to bring any of these nice. Other games.
Nice,
just bring the crew.
So good. Well, my number one, I think, is, if you've been listening to OMC for any length of time, you can math it out and work it out pretty easily. I won't bury the lead. My number one is Tainted Grail. Yes. Tainted Grail, Kings of Ruin, which was, I think it was 27 plays or something for Tainted Grail, Kings of Ruin. It was on the table for, and I think I played it start to finish in about 6 weeks. Anything you and I were playing in that time, we played in the dining room. The bunker was, it was Tainted Grail all day, every day. And I think what sucked me, and I know you've started playing Tainted yep. Grail, you're up to chapter 2 or chapter 3.
Just on chapter 3.
Right. The narrative on it, it just is so, so good. And the card play between the characters, you know, I play Tainted Grail two-handed with two characters. And unlike Isis Vanguard, if you start with two characters, you play with two characters all the way through. And this week's episode, I actually talk a little bit about Tainted Grail because I unpick Agamonia in detail and how it differs to things like Tainted Grail and Isis Vanguard. But Tainted Grail, so, so good. It was almost, I won't use the word obsessive, but it was like when I wasn't playing it, I was thinking about it. And when I was playing it, not like nothing else existed. There were no cicadas to distract me at the time, so nothing else existed. It's a great game. The narrative is outstanding. The gameplay is outstanding. The conclusion is wonderful, you know, in the way the story comes to this crescendo and reveals itself as you go. And the thing I love about Tainted Grail is that I can next year set up with the other two characters and play it again. Because when you're playing with the characters that you choose, the narrative is deeply tailored, as you will have noticed, to the characters. You'll be like, well, if you're playing,
if you have this character, go to this chapter.
Go to this chapter, go to this section. And you actually are locking off parts of the game. So while the emergent story will be the same, you know, I'm not likely to remember the fine details of the emergent story in another year or year and a half. The experience will be refreshed. And as I said, you're learning about these two characters. And it's not a scant little bit you learn about these two characters. You learn about their whole life start to finish and how they became who they did and what drives them, what their motivators are. And it's a beautiful thing, man. Tainted Grail, it was my number one most played.
I'm only a few chapters in and the story and setting is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Awesome. That's our top 10 most played for 2024. So, that's the main course and on to dessert, because as you know, the Christmas season is all about eating more than you could possibly want or ever need. It's about more, more, more. The season's all about more. We've got a few more courses to go. We're going to touch on one, and I don't like to harp on things that are overly negative on OMC. We're a wildly positive podcast, but I do want to. We're going to touch on a few more sections here. One that we've both decided we would happily never play again, for whatever reason. We're going to touch on the top three games that we only played once in the year. And I think that's going to be a really interesting list. And then the top game that was new to us in the year, not necessarily new in 2024, and then our number one pick for 2024. And that's Super Troopers Layout for part two here.
And you added a 2024 release that you didn't play.
Yes.
That you really want to play.
That you're dying to play. Yes. What's a 2024 release that you're dying to play that you haven't yet? Owned or unowned? You don't have to own it. It's just what's come out this year that you're dying to play. So do you want to lead us off with a game that you will happily never play again?
Yes. So I don't think this is necessarily a bad game.
Right.
I say that, and I'm going to get a little bit of trouble here because I don't think it's much of a game.
Sure.
And that I can see it on your shelf.
That's okay.
Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Oh, I don't disagree with you, right? Like, it's not much of a game. It's like you draw, you cheer, you cry, you move on. But yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of a crowd favourite amongst, like, Voldemort and Dusty.
Yeah.
And a few others. And I know the Peanut
yep.
loves it.
So does the Fox. The Fox loves it.
I don't think the Bubbles played it, but I'm sure she would love it as well. But I look at that and I go, I'd much rather play Spots.
Yeah.
It's push your luck, you know, reach into a bag, draw a chip. There's just no decisions there. Yeah. And I feel like...
Well, the decision is, do I reach into the bag again?
Yeah.
That's entire decision. And then what am I buying to put in the bag? But really...
But I think spots, the decision's not that much more in spots, to be fair.
Sure.
But it feels like it is.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Am I rolling again or am I not rolling again?
Yeah, easier to set up.
Yeah.
So, I've played it a few times.
So...
I'd be happily done. I'm sure I'll be playing it again because it'll come out in group settings, but...
Yeah. I think if you were to play it with the Alchemists and the Witches expansion...
I've played it with... Definitely the Witches. I'm not sure if the Alchemists...
Which gives you one-off powers in the game.
I haven't played it with that one.
No. Okay, so I think the Witches expansion, there are three Witches that come out, and they're a one-off that you can use in the game. And it's about when do you pull the trigger on the, and you can use them once, and that's it. They're burned for you in the whole game. I agree. It's not much of a game. There's not a lot of game there.
But Voldemort has all the upgraded...
I know.
...chips.
Yeah.
And they are so
nice. I have the chips. I don't have the little boxes.
I would rather just have them all in a bag and just reach my hand in and just play with them.
They do feel nice. Yeah.
I'd rather just that.
They are very nice chips. Look, totally fair. My happy to never play again.
Should Buttercup skip ahead a few minutes?
She may want to just, you know, skip ahead 2 minutes. It's the only game that I look back on and I think my behavior was really, really poor. And it wasn't. I wasn't angry or pouty or whatever. I just refused to engage with it. And I did not enjoy it. And it's not that... I think it's probably not a terrible... Lots of people love this game, and it just was not for me, and that is Love Letter Bridgerton. I just bounced off that so hard, and two rounds in, I was like, just kill me. And I will happily sit back and top up everyone's glass of wine while you guys are playing again, but if I never play Love Letter Bridgerton again, I will be a very, very happy Hammers. And that is the grand sum total of our negativity on this podcast, because... We will typically play just about anything, really. That's fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, really.
You know, probably for most games, I think, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, this was interesting. This was an interesting one for me, because I really had to think about this. And this is the top three games of 2024 that we only played once. Now, they didn't have to be 2024 games. And that's where this was kind of, I suppose, it was an interesting list. Because it basically becomes... For me, it was, what are my favorite games that we played, but we only got to the table once. And if we got to the table twice, it was out, right? Correct. It was out, right? If we got to the table twice, had to be only once. And I've got a couple of honorable mentions. I've got two honorable mentions I want to throw in there.
Sure.
So I guess you're going to start with number three?
Can you just go ahead with your honorable mentions?
So my honorable mentions, they didn't make the list, but they're games that I played just once that I really enjoyed, and they just didn't quite make the top three. And that was, I think both of these we played at PlayCon. One was Smartphone Inc.
Ah, yes.
Which it went on the table, and I went, what is this? It's like Spreadsheet the game, and it's got no art and no character. Great game. Really enjoyed it. And the other one was Endless Winter Paleo Americans.
Ah, yes.
Which I think we also played at PlayCon.
I do own.
I know you own. You own everything, but you brought it to... I'm pretty sure that was...
No, that was a copy there in the library.
Oh, it was in the library, but we did play it at PlayCon. Really enjoyed it. It's like mini game the game, but the art is awesome and had a lot of fun with it. So those are my honorable mentions for this category. So if you want to go straight into number three...
Number three, we only played just before Christmas.
Ah.
It's Rajahs of the Ganges.
Yes. Yeah.
It's one I own. I think I've only played it maybe six times, something like that.
Yeah.
But only once this year, and it's one of those games where every time I play, I go, it's really good.
Yeah.
And I've got all those little mini tiny expansions for it.
Yeah.
I kind of go, oh, now I want to play it with this one.
Yeah.
Or with this one.
And it is a great game. I've only played it the twice. I think we played it in 2023, and we played it about 6 weeks ago. And again, I didn't play well either time, but thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a great pick.
I'd be very happy for it not to be on this list next year.
Of the only played once?
Only played once.
And you certainly don't want it on the... have not played at all list.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number three is a game you own that I kind of put my finger on what I love about it, but I love this game. And we played it once. It's another one we played at PlayCon.
Oh, yes.
And it's one that we kind of pulled out and went, yeah. And then went, oh, this is a bigger learn than we remember. And we sat there staring at it for about 45 minutes with the young fellow who sat down and said, nice. Oh, join us. Join us. And he sat through a very painful staccato teach that we lurched through. And then he cleaned our clock at it. And that's Takenu.
Yes.
I love Takenu. I think there's just something about just the way the dice you know, Tekken is a dice worker placement game, but the way the dice shift as that obelisk turns, I think, is really clever, and how you've got to balance your scales with Osiris, who's the head of the
Light and Dark,
yeah. Tekenu's, what's the full name? Tekenu obelisk of the sun. It's great. I think
a Tekenu is an obelisk. So it's
obelisk. It's like an ATM machine.
Yes.
You've got this great big fat plastic obelisk sits in the middle of the table, and it's super beige and gray. Like there's no color in the whole game.
There's yellow dice.
There are yellow dice, which are kind of a mustard, if I'm being honest. But I love Tekenu. Every time we play it, I really enjoy it, and we played it once. And
that was the only time we played it three-player.
That's right. We played it two-player the other times we played. Yeah. And have we not?
Dusty has not.
We haven't played with Dusty. I thought we played with Dusty. Anyway, Tekken is my number three.
My number two is a game I own, but I didn't play my copy this year.
Aha, interesting.
I was able to make it to the board game barbecue
Okay, which I couldn't come to.
You couldn't come to. You had a romantic weekend with Fox instead.
Poured rain all weekend, which is great when you're away with your wife.
And so at PlayCon, we met LNG, who live up the road
Us. Yes, yes.
And at the board game barbecue day, I end up gaming with them
all most day. Of the day.
I played Cthulhu Wars at the start, and then LNG walked by. I thought, said hello, and then end up gaming with them after that. And they pulled out Orléans.
Ah, okay. And you own Orléans. I own Orléans. But we've never played.
We have not. And it's been a while since I've played it. I've only played it two-player with Dusty, and that was a while ago.
Yeah.
But they have it, and they have the Geek Up bits as well. So like Quacks,
Get
your hand in and feel the lovely pieces. And I played that with LNG and LNG's son, L.
Yep.
As
it's all L's in the family there.
Yeah. And I remembered how much I enjoy this game.
Yep.
It was really, really good. And nice. Now I've got to get it back to the table, but I don't have the Geek Up bit.
So, unplayable. 100%
unplayable. 100% unplayable.
It's but, I know,
so much fun.
The first time we talked about Orléans was like 2.5 years ago. And
about games before he's introduced.
We're talking about different types of games. It was probably even longer ago. And you're talking about bag builders. I think it was when I first invested in Wonderland's War. And you're like, oh, I've got another bag builder you might enjoy. Don't know anything about it, except that you love it. It's apparently a great game. So, great pick. Well, my number two, I only played once solo. And it is already on my list of Token Aspirations for next year. You know, we talked about this on one of our last bonus episodes. And it is a beast of a game that I love the art. I love the gameplay. I love the theme. And that's Tricarion.
Ah, yes.
I played Tricarion once this whole year solo. And it was a magnificent game. 4.5 hours to play Tricarion. Even solo, it was 4.5 hours. Now, granted, it was start-stop a bit. I was moving around. But Tricarion, I just think it is underrated. And I think partly because it's really heavy. Tricarion is I don't know what it's rated on BGG, but it's got to be a 4.5.
Yeah, I've played it once.
Yeah.
Voldemort used to own it. He's got rid of it now. But
yeah.
You have it.
I do.
You played it once.
I do.
Enjoyed it.
I do. Santa was kind enough to bring me the Tricarion metal coins, so now it's 100% playable, not 92% playable. But I've got the Tricarion Collector's Edition, and I played it once, and it was my number two for the year. I've only played once.
Well, let's try and play it. I said, at least once again next year.
It's
but
already on my Token Aspirations challenge to get played. It'll get done. Even if it's two player, it'll get done. So you're number one.
Number one, which I thought I might have played at least twice this year, but we only got one game in of it.
Yep.
And I don't.
Was it a 2024 release?
No.
Okay.
It's an old game. I can't even remember if you in this one game that we played of it. And that's Sidereal Confluence.
Ah, I think we did only play that once.
Indeed.
I think we only played that once. And I love Sidereal. I think it's a blast. My first game of Sidereal is still my favorite, where I ended up, you know, winning a negotiation by throwing a liter of cream on for Dusty because he's a mad for this cream I keep in stock. And that was the killer negotiation. But yeah, talk about Sidereal.
I think the most we've played it at is 5 players. And I think in our group, we'd definitely get a 6-player game in.
Yeah.
Like I don't think we've played it, for example, with both you and Battleships. Like, so we have 4 players, but I think 5 players, you know, you've been in there, but Battleships hasn't been there. I think he'd be our 6.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think my table's just about big enough to play a 6-player game.
It goes to 8, doesn't it?
It goes to 9.
Goes to 9. Yeah. God, that would be a loud table.
It would be.
Yeah.
But I think it gets misunderstood for how long it is. I don't think it's as long as people think it is.
I think the length of it is driven by, you know, if somebody is paralyzed in the negotiation phase where they don't understand the value of what they want or even what they what's around the table that they need. Like,
yeah. But they say like, oh, you know, maybe you can put a time limit on the negotiation phase or whatever. But I think it times itself
because yeah.
the trades, they get traded.
Yeah.
And if you don't step in and make a trade,
then you're left holding an empty bag at the end.
And
yeah.
then at the end, we'll say all the trades, they get themselves done in 10 minutes, I think, yeah. most of the time.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those games you got to play a few times to understand what things are worth.
Yeah. Because you get this little guide on it that says, you know, this is worth two of these and three of these, whatever the case is. But it's also what it's worth to you in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Well, one thing allow you to complete a converter, which correct. Will do something.
Or an end game or whatever, that, you yeah. know, because the value, despite, you know, as I said, I can't remember what the different cubes are called, but it'll say this one is worth two of these or three of these, whatever the case is. That value proposition will change depending on what cards you've got, what converters you've got, and what's happening in the game. And it's really yeah. clever.
I think it is very clever in the sense that you want to make beneficial trades for the other person as well. Like, the more you trade, the more people will successfully do their converters, which means the next round, more cubes are
that's right.
in the economy. Like, yeah. the economy builds and builds and builds.
Yeah.
So if you sit there and go, I'm not going to trade because I can't, you know, milk you for something, well, then you won't run your converter.
Correct.
You
have and they won't either. And
or they will because they will have gone and traded
with someone else.
With someone else.
Yeah.
And so they'll be running converters and you won't be because you're trying to force an unfair trade on yeah. someone. Yeah. So you've got to be willing to trade, and you've got to be willing to trade fairly.
Sidereal confluence in the Elysium Quadrant.
Trading and negotiation.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's, yeah, it's a wild name. It's yeah. like half the box.
Anything after the colon. No.
Well, my number one is a reasonably heavy game that we have played once. And we have played it 4-player. And I think we all really enjoyed it.
Are you looking over? It is over there.
And I think if I got the timing right, it is a 2024 release, and it's one that I would love to play. It's interesting. It didn't make my list of games that I want to play next year, or but we will. And that's Hegemony.
Yep.
Hegemony is it's a brilliant, brilliant game of socioeconomic manipulation. And we played that with you and I, and it was Dusty and Voldemort.
Yeah.
And we decided we want to play it at least one more time with the same factions, because you only really work your faction out about halfway through the game. And it was fantastic. Hegemony is great. It's a time commitment. I think our Hegemony game ran about 4 hours from memory.
I think that will come down.
Dry. I do too. Oh, I do. Too. I think it'll come down by an hour, no problem. You know, but Hegemony's great. It was my number one that we only played once in the year, and loved it. So that's our top three, and now it's top new to you in the year. So you played it this year for the first time, and I again have some honorable mentions for this one, but I'll do that when I
So my favorite game that was new to me but was not a 2024 game was Beyond the Sun.
Ah, okay.
So yep. Voldemort owns this. I played it a couple of times, 2 players
yep.
with him, and then the other week got a 3-player game in with Dusty as well, and it's great.
Yeah.
And like you said about Smartphone Ink, you look at it and go, looks really boring.
Yeah.
Like, there's barely any art anywhere. It looks like spreadsheet, the game. It looks like something Better Call Saul, you know, would really trough over and love. Yeah. But it's really neat. The techs are fantastic. It comes across as like a bog standard worker placement game. Like, you're moving this really boring little hex worker from space to space doing things. But the techs you unlock are all fantastic. They either give you a big one-off bonus or make a new worker placement spot. Then there's a bit of area majority fighting over this little galaxy board to colonize planets, and it's really, really good.
Nice.
Very deceptive. You look at it and go, "Nah, that looks pretty boring."
Yeah, I've not great. Played it. It looks like a game I would enjoy, but I've not played. So my new to you for this year, I want to splash out a couple of honorable mentions, because these are games that I played for the first time that were not new. One we played together. I'm just going to shout through the honorable mentions. One's a 2017 game that you own that we played, and that was Yamatai.
Oh, yes.
Yamatai hurt me for the first 25 minutes, and then you literally can hear this click in your head, and oh, man, it's a great game. Yamatai is 2017. One was Hadrian's Wall from 2021. Mm-hmm. Loved Hadrian's Wall. I think despite what anyone ever says, it's a solo game. Because even when you're playing with other people, there's a little bit of interaction, but it's a solo game. It's excellent. It's thinky. It's combo-tastic. And one I played at PAX was Abyss. It's a 2014
giant
game.
Giant
Fishman on the front. It's got this wonderful dual auction system. Lots of racing for points. And Abyss is a 2014 game. But my number one pick of new to me this year is one that you bought for me. And that was Nidavellir.
Yes.
Nidavellir is a 2020 game. And I think it's so clean. And I think the set collection is... I'm not going to say it's unique. But you've got multiple different styles of sets that you're collecting. And it's so easy to grok. And it's so easy. Like, we only played that... We actually only played that once. That's another one we only played once this year. It was you, Dusty, and I. And I've got the expansion, Thingvellir. We've talked about this before. Because I think I put it on Token Aspirations for next year. Is one I wanted to really play next year. But that was my number one new to me this year. I think it's like... It's a little bit Ra-esque. In that you've got this auction, super clean. It's really fast to go through. And I think our first game was probably 75 minutes, but I think our second game would be 45 minutes. You know, that I think it's great.
I think we were learning it from the rule book.
We were. It was like, well, let's crack this and let's do it from the rule book. So that's mine. New to me, 2024 was Nidavellir. Really, really enjoyed it. Every minute.
So
now this is the 2024 release that you most want to play at your first opportunity. So is it a game you own or don't own?
For me, it's don't own. And I really only thought about this one recently because there was a reprint on GameFound, I think. And I didn't get in. I was like, oh, do I not? No, I really spent too much money on games. But this is one which I definitely would like to pick up next year sometime. Whether there is a third Kickstarter crowdfunding or whether it actually gets a wide retail release. And that's Leviathan Wilds.
Okay, yeah, look. Okay, we'll talk through Leviathan Wilds.
So it's a cooperative game, and it's you get two decks of cards, you mash them together, you then have your deck, and you've got to climb a giant colossus monster.
Yeah.
Probably something from Aeon Trespass Odyssey, and you've got to remove these corrupting crystals from it.
It's a little more cartoony.
Yeah.
The art, but it's great. And it kind of feels... What was the video game? Shadow of the Colossus was the video game, which is a lot darker, obviously.
Yep.
But Leviathan Wilds, it looks great. It looks great. I almost picked it up two or three times as well, just going, oh, yeah.
And it's done with that, like, that spiral-bound book. So, you know, you open up a page and there's a monster, there's a new scenario.
Yeah.
And I think, I think the Bubble would love it as well. And Buttercup would probably play it with us. But, yeah, it just looks really good. And, like, yeah, maybe if there's another late pledge or something in the far future, I might have to... Have a look at it.
So, mine is... It's a game I own. It's a game, obviously, from 2024, because that was the rules. And it's a game that we'll definitely play. 100% it'll get played, because it's got killer solo modes just embedded into it. And it's not so much that I had honorable mentions, but there are two games that would have kicked it out if they'd been released in this year. And that was Betrayal of the Second Era, which I think is coming in 2 weeks, so it doesn't count.
You keep telling yourself
it's coming in 2 weeks. It's... Two more weeks. And the other one's Seti. Really looking forward to playing Seti, but it's not officially released in Australia yet. So I've got that on pre-order. But the one I most want to play from 2024 is Undaunted 2200 Callisto. It's sitting right there on the shelf.
Yep.
And that box, it's not even a big box. It's about 6 kilos because it's all boards. Like, there's double-sided boards in there for the scenarios. And each scenario has its own pattern for the troops. And... I'm really looking forward to it. I know that you've played some of the Undaunted series in the past with Battleships, I think.
Yeah, he owns just about everything for the first lot. Like,
Stalingrad and whatever else.
No, there's no Stalingrad, I don't think. He's got Normandy, the reinforcements, and maybe North Africa or something. All fits in one box.
Yep, so that's my want to play the most. It'll probably get played before I go back to work in 2 weeks, because I've got that kind of time.
Yep.
And that's my most want to play ASAP. Leviathan Wilds, I will happily play. I don't own it. So, over to you to go and invest. So then, we are at the end, which is, what's our number one pick from 2024 releases?
So, for me, as I said, I don't play many 2024 games. So, very quickly, my honorable mention is that small box sitting over there on the shelf.
Ah, yes.
Compile.
Yes.
Compile, such a great game.
It is a great game in a tiny little box.
Yep.
I had it in my honorable mentions, and I pulled it out because... I didn't want to bog this whole podcast down with honorable mentions. But Compile is a great game.
Yeah. But my actual favorite game, 2024, is just above it, and that's Harmonies.
Ah, it's your number one for 2024.
Number one.
Yep.
Played it so much.
Yep.
It's just good.
Yeah.
It's just
really. It is really good, and it's clean, and it's easy to teach, and it's fun. And it's just thinky enough without getting into Calico territory.
I've played it with a few different groups. Like I said, like the Bubble plays it, Buttercup plays it, played it with like Martha and Voldemort, and even Better Call Saul played it with us.
Yeah, nice.
And everyone's enjoyed it.
Nice.
It's just neat.
Yeah.
Easy, smooth.
It is. So I've got a handful of honorable mentions, which are all games that I couldn't let go without flagging that they are, I think, exceptional games this year. One was Inventions Evolution of Ideas. I think that was just one of Lacerda's both heaviest, but also easiest to learn. Maybe because I've played five Lacerdas now, they get a little easier to learn. But I do think it's the easiest to work through, and I think it was fantastic. One's on the table in front of us today, and that's Civolution. I think it's a great entry to 2024. One is Andromeda's Edge. Andromeda's Edge is a game that I can't wait to get to the table with you guys because it basically puts to bed all the Dwellings of Eldervale nonsense. Agamonia, which I have played the death out of in the last I've played it 8 times in 8 days. And that'll be done before I go back to work, I reckon. It's one of those. But my number one game for the year is one that I would play, I think, 6 or 8 times every time we get together, if you guys would let me, and that's Arx. I think Arx is the most unique game I've played this year. And I think the interplay between the decision space at the start of your turn and the workup to your next turn, I just think it's very clever. I'm not saying it's the best game of the year necessarily. It's the one I'm picking for. I think it's the cleverest, most interesting game of 2024, and I know it tops a lot of lists, and I'm not just trying to heap on top of that, but I am dying to play the Blight of Reach because I think it has a lot to add, and I think it's going to be very, very interesting. And so Arx, I think, is my favorite release of the year. That's it. That's the end.
That's it. 2024.
2024.
A few more games in before the end of the year.
Yes, well,
we'll be here with you in the bunker all day.
It's New Year's Eve today as we record, so we're going to get a few more in. And that concludes OMC's latest bonus episode. Big thank you, Super Trooper, for organizing the program. And do we get a preview of some of the future bonus episodes that you're working through? I know you've got a couple.
Let me have a look. Yeah, I've got a top 10 games that the other person owns.
Aha, interesting. Yeah.
I was thinking, I think one you've kind of mentioned before, top 10 memorable gaming moments.
Yeah, in that spots moment, I know it would be in our top 10, both of our lists, because it was just so hilarious. Yeah.
And also one which I don't want to be in, but I'd like to organize.
Oh, yes.
Is one for you, Martha, and probably Dusty.
Yes.
To talk about board gaming and cooking.
Board game food.
Board game food.
Yeah. I'm almost toying with putting recipes.
The chef and the two cooks of our groups.
Yeah.
Very nice. I think that'd be a really good episode.
All right. Well, stay tuned. You can reach us on all the socials. You can find us on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email me at wonmanclapping@gmail.com, as in I've won all the games, which I certainly don't. I'm on Instagram at @TheNumberOneManClapping, and you can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426, and I will keep plying you with empty promises until such time as they are no longer empty. Thank you, as always, for your time. This bonus episode has been brought to you by All the Cheese. It's New Year's Eve down under, and New Year's Eve means testing the limits of your lactose tolerance. Thank you, Dairy, for keeping me smiling and grinding my colon to a screaming halt. I appreciate you. Until next time, get your game on, even if you got to play with yourself. And remember, if you're making New Year's resolutions, Stop Bending the Cards is a good one. Don't Cheat at Arcs is also highly recommended. Peace out, mofos. Seriously, so much cheese. And a game that we're going to play next week called Fromage. That makes sense.